Hillbilly Horror Stories presents Classic Listener Stories.
Hey guys, I know this is supposed to be Classic Listener Stories episodes, but what I've got for you today are two stories that none of you have heard, but they're both very emotional. I will say ahead of time that both of these have some mention of suicide in them. So just beware. But these are ones that trust me, you're going to want to hear. Hey guys, this one is a long time in coming. We actually met this person at ScareFest a couple years ago. Actually, I was involved in a project that she was also involved with a couple of years ago. I want to welcome Christy Ayers to the program. And Christy, before you say anything, I want to talk a little bit about your bio and throw it out there because you deserve a proper introduction. Obviously, you're a paranormal investigator. It's one of the reasons we have you on here. But you're also the founder, the editor, and the director of The Para Gypsy, which I'm sure we're going to find out more about in just a second. You've been featured on Most Terrifying Places in America, which I love that show. And of course, Destination Fear. And we love Dakota and all those guys too. So first of all, welcome to the show. And how have you been doing?
I'm doing pretty good. Just trying to manage life, I guess. Things get they get kind of crazy sometimes. And I think my biggest issue is I want to be everywhere all the time, but that doesn't work. So I have to pick and choose where I'm going and what I'm doing.
Definitely understand that. So let's jump right into this because you got so much that I want to talk to you about. I hope you got like 6 hours on your schedule because this might take a while. Let's talk about the Para Gypsy first. What exactly is the Para Gypsy for anybody who is unfamiliar with it?
I love when people ask this question. So first off, I did not give myself that name. It was given to me by a friend of mine. So during COVID, I actually was for the first time in my life living by myself. My kids were moved out. I sold the house. I'm living in an apartment. And then we went into lockdowns, which for someone who's never lived alone, that is a pretty horrible thing to go through right away. And so I'm just kind of looking around my apartment and I'm thinking, why do I have two bedrooms and why do I have enough to feed eight people? And I just was sitting there thinking about how much I hated this life. And so I decided to do something about it. And that meant selling everything I own to live on the road. I gave up everything so that I could travel and find freedom and adventure. And the way to make money doing that is to put on paranormal events because that's what I love doing. I initially had a van, but I grew such a large network of friends and family and people all over the country. Now I just have a little SUV and I have a place to stay pretty much anywhere in the country. And I always think people are going to get tired of me, but I'll be there for a month. And the minute I leave, I'm getting a message. When are you coming back? Can you stay? Can you? And I'm like, what's wrong with you people? So it just kind of grew into this. And then my friend Brandon one day just said, you're the Para Gypsy. And I said, you know what? I love it. And then another friend of mine, he's a storyboarder. His name's Anthony. He storyboards for major motion pictures. I've actually ghost written some articles for him. So he just designed me the logo. And that it's just been going since then. And it's an adventure and I love every second.
So you've been doing this for a while. Are you not tired of life on the road or is it still something you're really, really digging?
Some days I think I'm just tired, but I'm not tired of life on the road. I do take time to slow down a little bit here and there, especially during the winter. I have a friend who lives in Florida. And she's like, hey, you know what? I built this little tiny home in my backyard. Come live in it. So I go down there for a few months and wait tables and have a normal job and kayak and adventure while I'm down there and enjoy all my friends down there. So, I mean, I have my moments of slow time and slow, you know, whatever. But what happens is after a couple of months, I start not being able to do it anymore. And I have to get back out there. So it's an addiction. And there's no other way to put it.
Nice. So we're going to talk about a bunch of stuff tonight, but you've obviously been on a couple of television shows. Tell me a little bit, I'm trying to go off memory here. Was it the same story featured on both shows or were they two completely different stories?
They were two completely different stories.
Okay, do you mind sharing at least in a nutshell what the stories were for both of those shows? Do you even remember?
Oh yeah, I do. I think both of these experiences that I had and the reasons for being on both these shows were they both impacted me. We'll start with the America's, I think it's Most Terrifying Places in America. I can never remember exactly how the words go, but most people know what I'm talking about. So anyway, so the Most Terrifying Places in America, they did a shoot at Squirrel Cage. They did an episode at the Squirrel Cage Jail, which is out here in Council Bluffs. I actually just did an event there this last weekend. But when I started like actually investigating paranormal, my very first place I ever went, believe it or not, was Villisca. And nothing actually happened. Nothing really major. And so when we went to the Squirrel Cage Jail, which the Squirrel Cage has just been pivotal in everything, when I went there, they didn't even have like a full-time employee. And so it was like call and make your reservation and hope somebody gets back to you, which they did.
Right.
And so my friend was like, you know, make sure let's film it and whatever, and you could put a get together a little episode. I said, okay. And so we go there and we film and you know, the whole time we're there, like nothing's really happening. And so we get upstairs. So the warden and his family used to live upstairs in the apartment. And so we're up there and I'm just frustrated. So finally I'm just standing up there going, whatever. I don't really think any of this is real. You're gonna have to scare me. Nothing's working. Like I'm just over it. I'm tired. You know, and so as I'm standing there, I feel like it feels like a really big, large man kind of walks up behind me. Puts his whole body up against me and just starts walking forward. So I'm walking forward, going, why am I walking forward? And thinking it's one of the guys giving me a hard time. And I'm looking over my shoulder and looking over my shoulder, and nobody's there. And then I panicked. And then I was like, but I asked for it. So I was like, you know what? You got me. You freaked me out. But you got me. I believe it. I believe you're here. I have been an addict ever since. So that's kind of how that went. So they featured that one on the show, which was it was a lot of fun filming for them. They did move it down to the first floor just for aesthetic reasons, which the story is the same, so I don't really mind.
Right.
But it was kind of funny because I'm always just smiling and happy, and you know, I'm telling my story on camera, and the director stopped. She said, "Look, he's Christy, this is a scary story. Can you stop smiling?" So I tried my best. Eventually they were okay with it. So, but that was a lot of fun.
So
Destination, what was
let
that?
me ask you this before we move on to Destination Fear. How long does it take to film something like your part for that?
For me, I think it goes rather quickly, and that's because I have a degree in film production. So I had my own series out for a little bit on Amazon Prime. Nick Ruff actually picked up my series, which Squirrel Cage was the first episode of that. So when it comes to film production, it's just something I know how to do and it's something that I've done. So I kind of know what they need and what they want, whatever. So for me, it didn't take that long. I actually think Destination Fear took a little bit longer, but they wanted me to talk about all different kinds of things. So they really had me on camera quite a bit more for that than for Most Terrifying Places. So it just depends.
All right, good, good. Because I can't tell you how many people I've talked to that have been in these shows, and I don't think I've ever asked that question of anybody. And it just dawned on me, I'm like, how long does it take to film that? I think Derek from Monsters Among Us was the only one I ever asked about filming of the shows, because of course he was on, was it Paranormal Caught on Camera for three or four episodes or three or four seasons. So, but other than that, I've never talked to anybody about how long it actually took to film the stuff. So. Then when it enters my head, it comes out my mouth.
Well, and I can tell you that, you know, typically when you're so like if you have someone who's a regular on the show and they're going to do the interviews or whatever, and it's, you know, the repeating, they'll have you come out and film like the entire season of you in like 2 days, 3 days. You know, and so then you're on every episode, but they come out, they film a bunch, you know, they it's time is money. And so they try to, you know, put whoever they are, you know, need for the whole season, get them in there, get them in done. So they're only flying them in and out one time, you know, so that it can be fairly quick.
All right, let's talk about Destination Fear.
Destination Fear was a lot of fun too. I actually had known Dakota. I don't even know if Dakota knows that he knew me before, but I knew Dakota before Destination Fear was ever a thing. But he's really good friends with the people in Edinburgh Manor, which is where this episode was at. And I'm also really close with them. They're wonderful people. They're like family to me. Just some of the most wonderful people. And so I guess Dakota decided, because from what I understand, I hope I'm not calling him out here, but from what I understand, I don't know if he broke in there or he just went in there. I have a feeling he just paid to go in there or just went in there and like he wimped out. And this is before he was paranormal anything, like he was real young. And it scared him and he ran out and he never went back. And so the whole episode was him going back to like face that fear. And so the owners wanted me to be the one on the show because I know a lot of history and things. And so the incident that happened to me there, and I did an episode at Edinburgh too. So in that episode, you can actually see really what happens. Like I said, I'm always like this, happy, in a good mood, whatever. This is just me. So we're there, and when we got there, me and the friend that I was with were kind of just walking around and whatever. And right off the bat, I was like, I just feel like something else is here. I feel like I'm being followed. I don't know what it is. It's just kind of weird. And as the night progresses, we end up downstairs in the basement. And if you know anything about Edinburgh, there's like this long wall that separates like the kitchen portion from like the dining room thing. And so you can walk all the way around it in a big circle. And so we're kind of back in this like known spot where it's supposed to be real dark entity and things. And we kind of come out around there. And I said to my friend, I said, you know, I said, I'm really still feeling it. And he goes, yeah, it feels like there's somebody else here. And we get this EVP that just says, there's a second. And we're like, what does that mean? Does it mean there's two of them and two of us? I don't know. But as we start walking down this hall, the anxiety is growing and growing and growing. And I finally come around the wall and we're almost to where the stairs are to go out of the basement. And I just snapped and I just start yelling at Jeremy and I'm just yelling at him and I'm telling him off and I'm just yelling. And I can hear him, like even later watching the video, I'm kind of laughing. He's like, okay, let's go outside. He doesn't know how to handle it. I don't think he's ever seen me like that or whatever. And we had a whole group of people. So I'm doing this for a few minutes and then I just stop and I'm like, laugh. And I'm like, I don't even know what that was. And I'm just kind of weirded out by it. I don't really know what happened. So then we go out and we were telling the whole group about it. And I said, all I know is we're going back. We're going back down there. So as a whole group, we all go back downstairs into the basement. We're sitting in this room with this supposed dark entity or what, and we're just sitting in there and we're all talking. And all of a sudden I just hear, get out, get out. And it's getting louder and stronger. And finally I'm just up and I'm like, I gotta leave. I gotta go out. So I go outside again where the owner is like, are you okay? And he told me that a female the night before did the same exact thing that I did. And I was like, that is so weird. And so then watching the footage later, I hear my group of people like, what is going on with her? We've never seen her like this. We don't know what's happening. She's really freaked out. And the whole time I'm just like, what is my problem? So of course this time we go back in again and I'm like, but we're going upstairs. And as we go upstairs, we're walking down this hall and I'm in front of everybody, have the camera going, and something jumped out and like made a weird noise at me from the closet that was right there. And my camera malfunctioned. So the video went out, the sound went out. However, somebody else had a recorder in their back pocket. So we were able to catch the noise, and it was just enough for me to say, I told you I'm not crazy. Something happened. But it was just this weird night. Later on, like months later, I went there by myself and did an investigation alone, and nothing at all happened. I was so disappointed.
That's so strange, and it happens so much. You can go to a place and it'd be very active, and the next time you go, absolutely nothing.
I know, and I'm like, here, I literally came here to be a sitting duck and nothing. Kind of frustrating, but it is what it is.
I could definitely understand that. So I want to get onto some other stuff. Before I get into the heavier stuff, though, I want to talk about You're doing an event at Octagon Hall, which is a place that, believe it or not, even though I live 3 hours from there, I have never been there. I've had two different opportunities to go, and something happened both times where I couldn't go, even though it was set up. And you're actually doing this with T Dog, our buddy. He
Yes.
he's a good friend, and we love the guy. Definitely been through. He's been through a lot in the last 6 months, and I'm glad to see him back out there getting it. And you guys should have a great time out there. But tell everybody about that event that they can actually come to.
Yes, I'm so excited for it. This is actually the second one Tim and I are doing there. I think last time we only did one night. This time we're doing a full weekend because we oversold last time. And we don't typically want to do that. So the place is amazing. So I had never been out there until this last event that we did. And I said, just don't tell me anything. And so with my group that I had, there was a point where we were asking questions and getting answers. And I just told the girl, I said, the only way we're going to find out if any of this is true is we go call Bear, who owns the place. And we went in and we were able to confirm that everything that we got from evidence was actually true. We had an entire story. And so that was just an amazing thing for the group to see and find. And I'm so excited to go back. We actually have Stacey Johnson is our special guest. She is joining us. You all do know who Stacey is, even if you don't. She played Pennywise in a couple scenes in the It movie. She's affiliated with the Conjuring films. I think she worked on the Annabelle. I'm not sure. She's got a huge list. She does horror films, and she's very much in the industry. And so she's a great person and a great friend, and I'm excited to have her coming along with us too. So she's going to be out there. If you want to take pictures, if you want autographs, whatever, she's going to be there. But her and I are going to start doing a lot more together because she's wild and fun and crazy, and I appreciate that a ton. So,
How can people find out more and get tickets to that event? Because it's
if
coming
you
up.
follow, you could go to Eventbrite and look up Paragypsy events. Basically, if you Google Paragypsy, you're going to find me. And I plaster my events on everything. Facebook is usually the best way. Follow me on Eventbrite because then you'll get every event. It'll just get emailed to you. So that's the best way. Just find Paragypsy, the big purple logo campus.
So, for people who aren't familiar with Octagon Hall, can you give just a little bit of the history on why it's haunted?
There is I don't really know the full history on it. I'm still kind of learning it. I kind of left that one up to Tim. he knew that place better than I did, but I can tell you that there is the Hanging Barn, which is where they did start lynching people out there. They have a cemetery on the property that was a slave cemetery. So there is a lot of different stuff. I want to say there was like some Civil War deaths that happened there and things like that. So I don't, I'm, I apologize because I don't really know the history.
No,
That's why.
you're
But I
okay.
left up to Tim. So.
And I wouldn't expect you to do like a 20 minutes on it or nothing, but I just wanted people to at least have an idea of why the place is haunted. One of the other ones is the little girl that actually caught her dress on fire in there and died. That
I haven't even heard of that one.
yeah, she's actually one of the haunted. Supposedly she got too close to the fireplace and caught her dress on fire, and yeah, it's one we've actually did an entire story on it, but it's been like 6, 7 years ago, long time.
Wow.
So, and when you do as many stories as we do, I don't have enough room in my brain to retain all this stuff. So something has to go for me to get this week's story. So that's kind of how that
Exactly.
goes.
That's me in a nutshell, and typically like I just have a notebook now that I put all of my notes in so that way wherever I'm going I have like a little refresher because I deal with so many locations now that I'm like it's tough to remember it all. And there's always new stuff. There's always like, one of the tours that I do is the Seven Sisters Road. And it has this history where like seven sisters were hung outside. And like, I don't think any of that's true. However, there was a girl that did die on that road. She was murdered by her stepmother. And, so like I just got all of this history. It's just amazing. It's crazy, like the stuff that you find out as you go.
Is that in Nebraska?
Yes, it is. It is in Nebraska City.
Yeah, I thought it was. Yeah, that's a crazy story. But yeah, like you said, who knows how much of that's true? Because I think they go back and research and they can't really find anybody who died, seven people or seven women who died at the same time and all that. So it's crazy what they do to try to research some of this stuff.
There were actually five lynchings out there, but none of them were female.
Right.
But
So
there
that
is
makes
some weird, there's a lot of weird stuff surrounding the actual family and some disappearances, and they can't seem to locate some of the family members. But I don't know if it was just something that was lost in history or if they're really just missing. So there is a lot of mystery about the family. I just don't think the daughters were hung from trees. So.
All right, so the next one I'm going to leave up to you.
Okay.
So we were both involved in a project a couple of years ago with a mutual friend of ours. Is that something you're willing to talk about?
Yes, I am actually.
Okay.
Did I just lose you?
No, we're here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yeah, I can hear you, but like my screen just went. Oh, there you are. Okay.
Yeah,
Uh-oh.
you didn't miss much.
Yeah, I like
So
hit something and it was just gone. I was like, where did it go?
Well, let me
Yeah.
give a little background on this then.
Okay.
So our buddy Josh Adia, he was doing some videos and he goes by the animal and he kind of dropped that for a while and he came back to it. But he puts out paranormal videos and he was working on a documentary that was literally about people who had overcome obstacles. And some cases it was way worse than others, and he wanted me to be on it. We went down and shot some footage and stuff for it and talked about stuff that's in my book. But he screened this by showing me the very first story that he did, which was your story.
Yes.
It was very emotional. If I remember correctly, there was no paranormal involved in it, was it?
No.
No, it was just strictly just real life stuff. And I didn't know if that was something that you felt comfortable talking about on this particular episode or not, but it's the most powerful thing that we'll talk about the entire night. And if you, I'll let you share what you're willing to share, and I'll leave
Okay.
it at that. So
Sounds
I'll
good.
turn it over to you.
I'm actually getting more and more comfortable with talking about it because I feel like once the book comes out, that's all people are going to want to talk about. And plus, I do a lot now where I deal with a lot with suicide and people who are dealing with suicide. I think that's kind of the biggest thing here is that I think animals kind of thing was about suicide prevention. However, in my case, it was more of a relief than it was anything else. When I was 14 years old, I met who would eventually become my husband. His name was Brian, and he was 20 at the time. He turned 21 right after, and I turned 15. Him and I started dating when I was 15, and he was 21. Which already you can see the problems there. And this comes after, I had a very abusive stepdad. My situation growing up was just not the greatest. It wasn't the worst, but I can definitely see some major issues that happened and, reasons why I ended up basically what I was looking for was an escape. And what I found was the worst of them all. And so I ended up having four kids with him, and not one of them was my choice by choice at all. It was pretty much 10 years of extreme abuse, just hell. I mean, it was hell. And obviously I raised my kids still. They're the greatest thing that ever happened to even come up. They're all worth it. Every one of them is worth every second of what I went through. But when I mean he I probably don't want to say too much on here just because I don't know the listeners. I don't want them to be
No,
there's a lot of sensitive
you're
things.
completely fine with anything you want to say. We since we're so anti-suicide on the show and we try to bring awareness, I think actually stories like yours are beneficial to the listeners.
Well, that's good. That's good. Well, I will tell you that was the one thing that happened was the one thing I think people should know is people always ask, well, why didn't you leave sooner? Well, there's a couple reasons I didn't leave sooner. One, I'm, so young and I have all these kids and don't, everybody turned their back on me. Nobody was willing to help because Brian was so crazy. But then he also, whenever he didn't get his way, if I didn't do something he wanted me to do, he would try to kill himself. There was a point in my life where I would come home from work, go find him where he was hanging himself, and cut him down and go about my day as if it was nothing. I stopped him from shooting himself. I stopped him from slitting his wrists open, overdosing. There were nights that he would take God knows what of how many, and I would be up all night long to make sure he was breathing, and didn't need to call an ambulance, because believe it or not, even trying to save someone's life, if you did, he'd still beat me up for it, you know, things like that. So, I mean, it was a constant battle with him every day. And, you know, people tell you all the time, well, you know, you got to save his life. You have to, you have to, you have to. The first time he ever tried to kill himself, I was 15 years old, and it was in my dad's basement. And I actually was just editing this part in the book. And I was just thinking to myself, my God, I'm 15 years old, and I'm in the basement with this man who is threatening to hang himself, and my dad's yelling at me to throw the garbage out. And I'm like, what do I do? Because if I tell my dad, he's just going to let him, he's going to be like, not my problem, and just call the police, and then he's going to die right there. And so I'm struggling with, if I don't go deal with my dad, he's going to find out what's going on down here. So I basically, as fast as I could, ran upstairs, took the trash out, grabbed a pair of scissors on my way back down, and then found myself on top of the washing machine, cutting an extension cord so that he wouldn't die. And this is me at 15, you know, and nobody knew that this happened. I didn't tell anybody. I didn't say, because I thought, what if I tell somebody, like, what's going to happen? You know, I didn't know if it was going to affect me. I didn't know if it was going to affect him. I didn't. You know, I just didn't know, and I was scared and I was terrified. But it was literally in that moment, that day was the very day that Brian took 100% complete control over me, because I now felt responsible for his life. And if I didn't save his life, nobody was going to save his life. So I did whatever he wanted me to do most of the time. So, you know, years later, after 10 years of this, you know, I finally got to a point where it's like, I just can't do it anymore. Like, I was very sick. I was in and out of the hospital. I was, you know, I lost a baby. I mean, there's just so much going on in this 4 month period of time at the end. They actually believe that my mother-in-law was trying to poison me, which was part of why I was so sick. And I didn't realize that till after. But once he finally did take his life and things were over, I went through years and years of therapy. I had eating disorders, and I had, you know, just phobias and paranoias and anxiety and just so many things. And it was just, I think, because the first book just talks about the years up until his death, because even his death was like surrounded with mystery and craziness. And, you know, they thought he was murdered for a little bit. And I'm like, I don't even want to know. I still don't know. I still believe he just killed himself. But I don't even look into it because I don't care. Like, it's not that I don't care. I just don't want to know. I'm good
I
with
get
how
it.
things are. So the next how many years, I mean, I ended up going into hiding, and I was in hiding for 12 years from my mother-in-law until she finally passed on. And those 12 years were just, you know, isolation and healing, and they were rough, but they were certainly better than the prior years. And healing without medication is difficult. I highly recommend it if you can do it. But you know, that's it's it, there's just so much to it, you know. And then my kids, they were 2, 4, 5, and 6 when their dad passed. So here I was, 23 years old with 4 young children as a widow, and just messed up. Somehow or another, we're all doing great, and we're all fine, and we're all, you know, they're doing well. I have a grandbaby now. I'm like, I don't know how we got from there to here, but people are like, why are you happy? Well, I have a lot to be happy for. So, you know, just take it as it is.
That's why I wanted you to talk about a lot of that because, like I said, I know the I've seen the complete video. I think it was like 30 minutes or so. It was very emotional. You stopped a few times, had to stop filming a few times because you kind of broke down, and it was one of the most touching things that I had ever seen. And I was like, why am I even on this video? Because nothing I have is anywhere close to what this woman went through. And to this day, and we played a young lady that's a friend of ours, Mandy Lemon, and her story was it was so tragic. And your story and her story are the two most emotional stories I have ever heard. It was just so they it just stood out to me. And because you're so happy, I thought it would be good for people to hear that there can be life after tragedy.
Yeah,
So
there is.
that's why I
There's
wanted
so
you to
much.
tell the story.
You know, that's the funny thing is it's not that there can be life after tragedy. I feel like life begins after tragedy. Like you have the freedom and the ability to fix it and to be what you want to be and to do what you want to. I mean, don't get me wrong. I still have my struggles. Believe me, there's a very close friend of mine who listens to all of this and why he sticks around sometimes. I don't know. You know that I have my moments and whatever, but happiness is a choice that you make every single day. And every single day that I wake up and I have a good day and I'm happy and I appreciate my life and my kids and my family, that every single time I do that, to me, that is a win over every horrible, awful, negative thing that's ever happened. You know, and I also feel like all of those bad, negative things, they 100% happened so that I could help other people through things because I went through it alone. I went through it very alone. And the people who reach out to me, the number one thing I want them to know is they are not alone and I won't let them be alone. I'll annoy them, I'll aggravate them, whatever I have to do. But I don't want to see anybody sitting in those moments of deep sorrow by themselves thinking nobody cares because it's just not the truth. It's not. You know, we're all better than that and we're meant to do that. The thing I talk about at, you know, these when I do speak and when I'm given the opportunity to speak is about restoring the great human connection. You know, I love the paranormal. I love ghost hunting, but I think when I watch people sometimes do this, they're trying to make this deep connection with somebody they don't know who's already moved on and their loved one is sitting right next to them needing that. And I can't figure that out for the life of me. I'm like, stop what you're doing for 2 minutes and turn to the person that's right there and let them know you're there and tell them you love them and tell them you care about them and show them every second you can because you don't want to be trying to reach out to them when it's too late, when you can do it right now. I just, you know, it's crazy to me how much we'll put into everything but what we should. So.
Yeah, you're 100% correct. So I got one more question for you before we end.
Okay.
Do you ever feel like Brian has reached out to you from beyond the grave?
So I will tell you, it's funny because I don't know if it's funny, I'm about to talk about him dying. But when he did pass away, there were things that started happening. I was terrified. Just in general, I was terrified of everything. I couldn't sleep in my room. I felt like he was watching me. I just felt, you know, I didn't feel that actual like freedom from the control that I thought I would. It was worse. And so in those first few days, it was my dad. Yeah, I was sleeping on his couch and in the living room, and I would sleep with the TV on and the lights on because I couldn't handle silence. And so we had track lighting hanging up in the living room with the little slider, you know, so you could dim it and whatever. And I'd be laying there and the lights would just start and you could see the switch going up and down, up and down, up and down. And it would just freak me out. And I'm like, why is this happening? And finally one day I was like, Brian, knock it off. And it never did it again. I'll let her go by. And then not so long after that, it was like a couple of days later, I'm getting the kids ready because I think we were actually going to the therapist that morning because the kids didn't know yet. So I was taking them to see a therapist so that I did this in the best way possible. And as I'm sitting there getting them dressed, I look over the TV and there's a candle lit. And I'm looking at the kids and I'm like, who did that? And mind you, they're, you know, 2, 4, 5, and 6, and they're looking at me like, who did what? And I'm like, lit the candle on the TV, and they're just looking at me like I'm crazy. And I went over there, and there was no wax melted in the candle, so it had just turned on. My wedding rings started randomly appearing on the dresser. I would take them off, and then there they would be. I would lose them, and then there they would be every day on the same spot. My car, every time I turned it on, a Christian radio station would be on. And I mean, I was testing these. Why is this happening? Why is this happening? And finally, one day, I said, "You know what, Brian? You're really freaking me out. I really just want you to leave me alone. Just leave me alone. I'm done." And I've had nothing since. Now I kind of regret it because I'm like, man, how cool would it be if I had my own personal, like, you owe me. Open that cabinet door. Leave it to me to make a joke about anything. Yeah, no, it all stopped after that. That was the end of it. So I believe it was him.
For anybody who wants to get your book, your first book, how can they get that one? And then tell us a little bit about the second book when it might be out.
So Amazon, I'm going to self-publish on Amazon. I'm in the editing phases right now. I'm doing the best that I can to edit it quicker. But again, it is very emotional. So sometimes I just need to put it aside for a day or two. But it will be called The Ghosts of Me. And it's going to be, again, if you're following Paragypsy, it'll end up all over the place. I'll just put it up there and you'll be able to buy it there. The second book I've barely started writing because I'm trying to focus on my first one. So I don't know how long it will take. I guarantee you it'll be a lot quicker than the first one, just because I don't know what I'm doing. By the second one, I'll know what I'm doing. I'm almost there. I'm almost there to understanding what I'm doing. I've had a lot of really good friends give me a lot of good help. And so just don't make fun of my grammar. All I ask.
Yeah, that's the one thing I learned is people were like, "You write this just like you talk." I'm like, "That was the intention. One, I don't know how to do it another way. And two, that's what people expect. They hear me talk for a living. So why wouldn't they want to hear the book in my voice the same way?"
Exactly. I mean, and that is a very good way to put it. Although I will say I've learned a lot about grammar. I was a straight A student, and I did really well in English. I was an honors English student. But for whatever reason, writing this book, I'm like, wow, I've gotten quite not good at this over the years. So that's how I feel.
I've learned that on social media, things that I write out now, after writing the book, I'm more conscious of doing it the right way and not saying something that's completely grammatically incorrect. So
Yeah.
it's taught me to pay attention after 50 years that, hey, let's do it better this time. So.
Yeah, I get that. I'm right there with you. So I'm like, as long as nobody, but you know what? Someone reminded me that's why there's several different editions of the same book. And I'm like, valid point. So
Chrissy, it's been a
it becomes
blast
a
having
best
you on
seller.
here.
Thank you. It's been good
Well,
having
I hope it does too, because
you.
books like that can help a lot of people. And that's why I put my book out. I know that's why you're putting yours out. I'm sure you're not putting it out to make money, because we both know as independent authors, we're not getting rich off these books.
Exactly. I do just want to help. I want to make things easier for others. So, hopefully that'll help.
We'll have a fantastic event, Octagon Hall, coming up at the end of May. I wish I could be there. Unfortunately, not going to happen. I'm just too far away at this moment to make these things happen. But hope you and Tim have a huge, successful weekend up there.
Thank you. Thank you so much. And thanks for having me on and for the good conversation. And hopefully I made you proud.
No, you 100% did, and I appreciate it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Hey guys, this has been a fantastic week for getting people on the show that have never been on before, and I've been able to reconnect with some people, and we've got Jen from Kentucky on, and we go back probably 27, 28 years. We worked together back in the late 90s. She was a young little, not too far fresh out of high school, and I was, still old. But, way back then, we used to have some cool conversations back then, and she was somebody I absolutely loved, and we missed each other over the years of not connecting or anything until Facebook came along, and lo and behold, you connect with everybody on Facebook. So we've been able to chit chat back and forth over the last 15 years or so. But she came to me a couple of days ago and said, "You know what? I've got some stories that are kind of out there, but I think it's time that I share them." And I'm excited that she chose us to do that with. So, Jen, thanks for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
So, your stories have a wide range, we'll say. And I don't know where you want to start. I've heard some of it, but not all of it. And I'm excited to hear the rest. I'm going to turn it over to you and let you start wherever you want to start. So, how about that?
Sounds good. I think we'll start at the kind of like the smaller type of stuff, if you will. I call it the Sadie Lane Saga. That's where we used to live,
Nice.
my kids and I. And it just started with things start lights turning on and off, flickering, radios coming on, going off. We had this cube, and it was an alarm clock for the kids that plugged into the wall. Well, it kept going off, so we decided to just unplug it. Well, it would go off. You'd have to go upstairs to get it. And it's like, what is going on here? And it would stop, go back downstairs, start back up. It was just kind of a trickster type thing. And kids got pretty scared with that. So we took it outside and smashed it up, thinking, well, surely there's a battery, backup battery, or something going on. There was not. So we drove that to a dumpster about a block away and threw it away to make sure we didn't have to mess with it again. But it progressed into, we didn't really talk about these things. We all experienced them. In particular, we had this room called the Yellow Room, and it was just a really cute, quaint room that you didn't have a bad feeling about or anything. But you'd have nightmares if you slept in there, and anyone that slept in there experienced it.
Let me ask you this. Did all this happen like as soon as you guys moved in there, or did it take some time?
It was intermittent, and then it progressed over the years. We were there a total of 16 years. So we were friends with the neighbors. They were elderly. They kind of looked after us. We looked after them. And ultimately, by the time everything was said and done, it ended up leaving my house and going to theirs. So, which was
Win-win.
interesting. Yeah. But we would actually see my youngest son. I had an experience seeing him come out of my bedroom and walk down the hallway towards the kitchen. And I was like, what are you doing in my bedroom? What were you doing? That just wasn't a place the kids played, and didn't turn and look at me or anything. And I was like, hey, what are you doing? Hey. And I hear him say, Mom, what do you want? And then he comes running down the stairs. My son, my actual son. So what I saw wasn't my son walking out of my bedroom towards the kitchen. And I kind of was like, oh, you've got to be kidding me. I mean, it happened like boom. Walked, I said something, then my son come down the staircase, leaned over the banister, and I'm sitting right there. And there's no other way to get upstairs or anything. So I didn't really say anything. I kind of mulled that one over. And then my other son come to me and said, hey, Mom, I had something really weird happen. And I was like, what? He said, I saw, the youngest son in the bathroom, but he wasn't here. He was at his dad's. And then I had someone else. There was four people that saw my youngest son, but it wasn't him. And he wasn't home but the one time with me. So I'm not really quite for sure what that was, but we just kind of rolled with the punches. Sometimes it was funny in the sense that we put the movie The Poltergeist on. And I would love to scare my kids as jokes and pranks and And no sooner did we get it started and it started feeling scary, all the lights and the television, everything went boom, went off. And it was at night. My kids screamed. That was funny to me. So I was like, okay, I'm not really quite for sure what happened, but we'll just go with it. So there's another night I had a friend over and we're sitting on the couch and we're talking. It's quiet in the house. And upstairs, I had a big loft. And I used to have my room in there until I moved my two youngest sons in there. And they were probably 8 to 10. They were 2 years apart, bunk beds. Well, the one jumped out from the top bunk, hit the ground like he always did. He jumped all over the place and then ran, hit every like creek board to the top of the stairs. And I jumped up because I knew something was wrong. He didn't just do that in the middle of the night, you know. And I run to the bottom of the stairs and he's not standing there. So I didn't waste no time, went straight upstairs and they're both dead asleep. And I wasn't the only one that heard that either. So, and it hit every creek board. And it was just, I would call that like a trickster thing. But nobody would sleep in that room. And then one day, my mom passed away. And I got her furniture, my grandmother's furniture, and I decorated that room. Made it a second bedroom for me. Nobody would use it. And no sooner did I do that is when there was no more problems in that house at all. I don't know why that was the case, but it wasn't. And about a week later, my neighbor called and said, Jen, I think your unwanted guest showed up over here. And it was doing things like tapping their feet when they were upstairs, sitting in their lazy boys or watching television or through the remote on the floor. And it was just kind of the joke that we had amongst ourselves, but you just dealt with it. So that's some of the lighter hearted stuff kind of we dealt with. That was, you know, really, we didn't really talk a whole lot about it. We just dealt with it. Didn't know what to call it, any of the sort.
So obviously, though, things got worse.
Oh, they have gotten worse. Or my experiences have gotten worse. Maybe not so much tied with the house itself. There was one time I was at a job and my office was across from another office and I was working. And I got this bad feeling out of nowhere. And I turned and looked, and there was a man that walked in and was talking to my coworker. And I just got, oh, that's a really bad man. And I caught a look on his face, and his face shifted. And I was like, I don't want him to see that I saw him. So I went back to work, and no sooner did he walk out than I asked my coworker, who was that? And come found out this gentleman had actually been to prison and got let out for murdering his wife. So I didn't really know what you would have called that back then. And that was kind of the first time I experienced seeing what I would consider demonic in someone's face. It's like a filter that moves.
So when you said his face shifted, you mean it changed from his regular face to something that you termed to be demonic?
Correct. It's like his face, but then it just moves. It's like a film or a filter over top of it and just shifts and moves. And you're just like, what was that? You know, and I told my coworker, I got a really bad feeling from that person. I don't ever want to see that person again. Like, I didn't know who they were, didn't know anything. And I'm surprised, you know, my coworker offered, you know, the information about, you know, his past. So, and I never saw that person again. The second time that happened to me, I was I was with a friend of mine. We went to a bar in Louisville. And we walked up to the bar and ordered drinks and some food. So we're waiting. I went ahead and took my drink. And there was like a back room, another room behind where you could take your food and eat and everything else. But we're waiting on the food. So he waited at the bar for the food. I went and got a seat in the back. And I'm sitting there. And there's this... I set my beer down and then I go to pick it up and I see this man and all of a sudden I'm seeing bad things. Like it was like a brick outside of a brick home with like a staircase, a metal staircase on the outside of the home and him walking up the staircase and into the house. Into a window is what it was. And then there was a woman laying in the bed. I'd never had that happen to me before. And so I'm looking at the guy and I was like, oh no, this is not a really good person at all. Like I got the goosebumps. I didn't enjoy it. Well, he looks up and notices that I see him, not just see him as a person, but I see him and that he's not a good person. Well, I'm holding my like beer at the bottom of it, but it's still sitting on the table and the glass explodes in my hand. The beer goes everywhere and I'm in shock. Like I'm just looking at it. And then there's this maniacal laughing. And this guy had sat down across from me, facing me in the table next to where I'd sat down. Well, there was a bartender in the corner and saw this happen and come running. He goes, I've never witnessed a glass explode like that. And he's like picking the glass up. Don't touch the glass. I'll get the glass, wiping me off, wiping the beer off. And I'm just sitting there. And then the guy turns and looks at the man maniacally laughing. And I look up and it was like you could see it in his face shifting. And so when the person I was with joined us, he was like, what's going on? I said, can we please get the food to go? And then the bartender guy was like, can I get you another beer? I said, no, I'm good. I'm fine. I don't want anything else. I want to go. So the friend I was with went back, said, come with me to the bar. And we went back the same door we had walked in to the bar to pay the tab and everything to leave. And he was just like, I wish you would tell me what's going on. I'm like, I will. Let's just get in a car. I really want to go. That's just it. Get the stuff. Let's go. And I felt like that man was walking in. So I'm looking at this door that we had come in and out of. And I get this feeling like he's just right there next to me. So I turn around and there he is. There was a second door I didn't know because I didn't frequent this place. And so he had come through this other door and was standing right there. Well, I mean, the way I jumped back into my friend who was paying the bill and him noticing this guy had followed us in there was like, hey, is there a problem? He didn't say a word. He just had this sick smile and it just shifted. And I said, let's go out to the truck and go. So we go out to the truck and I had this feeling he was following. We get in the truck, he had backed in. So we had to drive out and that man standing right in front of the truck. That scared me for, I didn't really want to leave my house and go anywhere for about a month. I'd never experienced that. And I prayed I never had to see that again. I can't handle that. I don't know. That was demonic. I don't really understand the vision that I had. And I've never had a vision like that since.
How long ago was that?
About 10 years ago.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So how often do you see not necessarily the full vision, but how often do you look at somebody and can tell that they're not a good person? Is that something that's just like everybody you run into, or just on occasion?
I've had that happen 3 times, and the third time I had that happen, I was being attacked, physically attacked. And I haven't experienced it outside of those 3 times. I'm in a place now where I can accept that more as a gift. I mean, in hindsight now, I just wasn't in the place to accept that as a gift to help myself, to help me, basically. It isn't fun to have to experience that by no means, but I don't think it's bad by no means anymore. And honestly, since I haven't experienced that since the last time, I'm kind of wondering, was it because I prayed that I never did again? But now I'm more open. Not that I really want to see all that, but I'm open to what I need to see. So,
What do you think the reasons are that you have those abilities? Do you feel like there's some type of a reason? Is it that you were meant to have them?
I think we all have them.
I
Truthfully,
agree.
it's just whether or not you acknowledge it, whether or not you want to acknowledge it. Or like for years, this just recently happened to where it clicked and I had this epiphany that it all just fit together for me. I do believe in God and Jesus and the Holy Spirit. And I think that spiritual thing, that gut, that knowing, that seeing, that feeling. I mean, I've physically been lifted up by spirit before. I think that's a great thing, and I think it's okay that it all makes sense and that it happens. And I think that could happen for anyone if you're open to it and you're accepting of it.
I know you're very secure in your spirituality. Does this scare you at all, though?
I don't go looking for it. I like to live in my little bubble. I have 3 acres, in the woods, out in the country. I'm kind of a hermit. I like my earthy stuff. I mean, I love cutting grass. I was cutting grass earlier before this meeting. That grounds me and keeps me grounded, keeps me happy. I have my friends. I have the love of my family. I have ultimately what I need in life. And if what I have can help others, I'm more than willing to do that. I mean, I'm still getting to that part of my journey. I think we're all, life is a journey for everyone, one way or another. I'm open to that being a part of my journey, learning more about it. I've accepted what has happened. Not that it's okay it happened, but it is, it happened. It's real. I've accepted that and I'm okay with that. And then I think now if I were to see it, I'd understand it more. And I think I would be in a place to have dominion over that to a degree. I don't have to be afraid of it. I don't have to stay in my house for a month because I was afraid to go out and see that again. And I'm beyond that.
Good. Are there any other incidents or experiences you've had that you'd like to talk about tonight?
Well, I think the big one, the real big one, was definitely something that I really wasn't in a place to talk about for a very, very long time. But I am now. I was dating a gentleman who was going to be baptized on a Sunday. That Saturday before, there was some behavior that was questionable, and I'm like, I don't think I really want that around. So I was kind of distancing myself emotionally, but to myself, I wasn't acting any different. I was kind of thinking, you know, I don't really know that I want this in my life type stuff. That came out of nowhere. I didn't expect that type of behavior from him, but it was a behavior I wasn't going to put up with. But I was like, well, he was going to be baptized the next day at church. We were going to have family and friends over. I'd cooked some food for that. Got up Sunday morning and got in the shower and was taking a shower. And then all of a sudden, and I was thinking about these things. That was my thinking time. And all of a sudden, the shower curtain just went slamming open. And I was just like, what is going on? That was so abrupt and it scared me. And he grabbed me by the throat. And I'm looking at him, shocked. Like, what are you doing? I mean, if you love somebody that loves someone doesn't try to choke them. Well, in the meanwhile of thinking about that, I'd passed out and kind of woke up in the bottom of the tub, and he's punching me. So I was laying there in the fetal position with my hands up. And I was like, okay. He was very big, very strong man. I was not a big person. If he gets a hold of me in the right way and hits me in the face or something like that, you know, the back of my head's pretty tough. You know, I'm trying to be strategic about this, not quite for sure how I'm going to get out of this. And in my head, I hear, look up. No. I mean, that's what I'm saying to myself. Like, if I move my head, he's going to get me in the face, you know? And I was like, no. So this invasive thought vibrated in my head, look up, a second time. And I'm thinking even louder, no, I'm not looking up. And then all of a sudden it was like all this pressure inside my head. I said, look up. And I didn't hear it with my ears. It was like in my head and just vibrated. And immediately, because it was so loud, I went like that. And when I did, his face was shifting. Immediately, I knew I was under spiritual attack. I wasn't just under physical attack. I was under spiritual attack. And when I did that, he said, I'm going to go get a knife and I'm going to stab you to death. And I was, you know, the whole fight, flight, all that. I froze. I sat there. I was imagining what it would feel like to have multiple stab wounds and the burning and what that was going to feel like. And I was frozen in fear, just absolutely frozen in fear. And in my head, I said, Granny, will you help me? And my granny had passed. And I don't know why that's what I said, but that's what I said. And I was sitting there like this, and under my armpits, I wasn't thinking anything. I was frozen. My brain had shut off. I had no plan. You know, if you think something in with your brain, your body listens and goes. There was no thought process. I was in utter fear, just frozen. And underneath my armpits, I was physically lifted up from my armpits, up out of that tub and into the door to shut the door and lock the bathroom door. And I was like, whoo, I don't know how that happened. It wasn't, I knew immediately, I didn't think to do that. That wasn't me. I didn't do that. And so I lock it and he's banging on the door. But I had that older home and built in the 40s. The wooden door was so thick, you couldn't beat through this door. And he's beating and beating. And I had, of course, with the older home, my windows were painted shut. So I'm trying to get the window. I'm going to sneak out this window. I could only get it open just so. I couldn't. It just was painted, and I'm banging. He's banging on the door, and I'm just trying to shift this up, like I'm hitting it and trying to get it to go up. And it got quiet. And I was like, he must be, I'm thinking he must go, went and got a screwdriver. He's going to try to take the handle off the door or something. At that time, the window went flying all the way open. And from the outside, there was a cellar, a crawl space, but you had to go down like four steps to get to the crawl space. So if you were outside, right above the crawl space and the stairs was that bathroom door. So the best I could at 5'7", he wasn't that much taller than me, the best I could do was touch the bottom of the wood window frame. There was no touching the actual window. And how, from the outside with no leverage, did that window flop up like that? And immediately when that did that, I ran out of the bathroom to the back door, locked the back door, and it had all these like window panes in it. He hit that back door, punched his hand through the glass to reach in to unlock it. And I didn't have a stitch of clothing on. I ran out the front door into my next door neighbors. And I knocked, knock, 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 knock. They had the glass door open, but the wooden door, or the glass door locked, but the wooden door open. And I jumped on the other side of the railing and waited. And she come to the door and let me in. And he come flying out the front door. He sees me. I climb over the railing, get into the house, lock the door as he hits that door. And I was like, call the police. Just call the police right now. And he's trying to plead with her that there's something wrong with me. It's me that's the problem. And I looked at her, my neighbor, and I said, it isn't me. Please call the police. And then we can figure all this stuff out later. And they did. And they picked him up and he went to jail. And I went to every court hearing to make sure that he was going to be held accountable for that. Because had I not prayed about that and been physically lifted up, and you can't tell me otherwise because my brain was mush. I didn't even know what was happening, in that moment to be physically lifted up out of a tub like that. And I ended up going to the court, and they had like a mediation. They wanted to do a mediation. They truly believed he was really sorry. I didn't want to be in the same room. They had an advocate, whatever. And he looked at me and he looked at them. His face wasn't moving. And he said, whatever she says, I believe. She would never lie. I don't remember any of it. I don't know what happened, but she's never lied. So anything she says, please believe her, and gets up and walks out. He'll take whatever punishment and gets up and walk out. And I was just like, look, there's no nothing. I don't want to do mediation. I don't want to talk about this, work this out. I'm done. I'm cutting complete ties and I'm done. And we have, that's been years ago. So that really would shake you to your core. And I think that was brought on because he was to be baptized that day. And had I not listened to that voice to look up, I wouldn't have known that it was a spiritual attack to pray, to be lifted up, to get out of that situation. I'd be dead to this day. I wouldn't be alive.
Wow. I'm trying to think of the proper way to say this. That really hurts me to know that you had to go through all that, because I can't imagine what was going through your head, hearing all that, doing all that, having to run out of the house, run to a neighbor's. I mean, everything about that was so traumatic, and I just absolutely hate that you had to go through that.
Yeah. Well, thank you. I will say this. when I was running out with not a stitch of clothing on, there was a lady walking a dog on the sidewalk. And I remember seeing as I'm coming out and running across the yard. But I don't know what she did, but I'm afterwards to laugh about it. I wonder what that woman was thinking. I wonder if she ran, you know, just to try to make light of it, you know, but I don't know. It was interesting to say the least. So no, it's not something I really want to do all the time. I know you go to haunted places. I stay away from that stuff. I've never been, even though I've lived most of my life in Louisville, I've never been to Waverly, ever. I drove there and we were going to walk in and I said, nah, I'm good. I just don't. And anybody that's ever gone and then come to my house, I'll tell them, do not, you know, don't bring nothing with you. I mean, I'm not dealing with that stuff. So my kids, I would walk through the house and I would say, in the name of Jesus, anything that don't belong that's in this home, get out. You are not welcome. And I would open my front door. And because things would happen, you know, to this day, sometimes if I don't cleanse the house very often, things will start moving. Lights will start, you know, coming on and off, things like that. And what's funny is my youngest son called me one day and he goes, of course, they all joke. Mom's crazy. You know, there goes mom. And all in good humor, you know, they're boys and I'm a boy mom. So we pull pranks and jokes and make fun of each other. That's just what we do for fun. And he called me, he said, Mom, been having some issues over here at Dad's house. Will you come over here and kick it out? Will you bless the house? And I just started laughing. I couldn't believe he called me to ask me that. So he must think that there's something to it. But
right.
True story, to go back to the same individual before all that happened, I had a Ford Windstar at the time. All my kids were in sports, whatever. So I had this Windstar van. And there was nothing wrong with this van at all. When that individual would get in the van, all the lights would come off. And just, they would just move around. There's lights in the back. There's lights on the side, lights in the front. And they were just, and it was like, every time I get in this car, you know, this van, this does that. I said, well, it only happens with you. I don't know how to explain that, but something don't like it. I think it was my granny, to be honest with you. Like, Jen, I don't like this. Get rid of this dude. So.
Well, Jen, this has been, I don't want to say a pleasure. It was a pleasure catching up with you, but I hate that it had to be for you talking about some of these horrible things that went on. And I'm glad that you're not in that part of your life anymore.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that. And I hope if there's any way that could help somebody else, then I hope it does. You know, I mean, I didn't know before talking to you today, before we went live, that other people experience these things. I have never spoke about this with people. That is just not everyday conversation for me and my family and my friends. You know, we know this stuff happens, but we just, you know, and go on with it. So I appreciate you sharing your knowledge and that other people have experienced these things. And I mean, I hate that it's happened to other people. I'm just thankful that I'm not the only one it's happened to, you know, bad to say, but you know, I'm not special.
Well, that's debatable, but either.
I thought you'd get that joke.
Jen, thanks for coming on, babe. I'll talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Thanks, Jerry.